What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 60. This is not the Ice Age, people, for November 13th, 2013. Our special guest is Ryan Wantz and Joshua Stone. Did I say that right, Ryan?
You did.
All right. I saw you typed in the pronunciation, but sometimes then I even struggle. All right, so of course, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. Right beside me is...
Brianna.
George.
Marissa.
Morena.
Jocelyn.
Edith.
Lorena.
Aisha.
Alex.
Marlin.
And we have a guest audience here of Mr. John T. Powell. He's going to be, I think he got out of the Google Hangout there. So he's here just kind of hanging out and watching to see what we do. If you want to join our conversation, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Again, that's sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. There it says live. You can click on the live link and watch that live. And then there's also a link to the social stream where you can contact us on Ustream. You can do it via Twitter because Aisha's over here on Twitter, right? Is it working?
Yeah.
All right, so Aisha's on my Twitter, todaysmeet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast. And that's where we got Brianna over here. You can comment in there. So our website, and it has links to all those different ways, todaysmeet, Ustream, Twitter, Facebook, any of that stuff. And hopefully we'll see your comments and answer your questions. Real quick about Ryan. He's the assistant athletic trainer at Lehigh. Is that how you say it, Ryan?
It's Lehigh.
Lehigh University, in the profession for about 11 years, and is currently serving on the NATA Governmental Affairs Committee as a District 2 rep. All right, so governmental affairs, does that mean you're influencing people, the way people vote, Ryan?
More being able to represent District 2 in helping them advocate for the profession and informing them of what's going on within their state and within the federal government that relates to athletic training.
Gotcha. So really just advocating for athletic trainers in your area.
Absolutely.
All right, very cool. And then also we have Joshua Stone. His company is Human Kinetics, and they've been there for about 13 years. And interesting thing about Josh is I think there's 18 initials after his name and like 12 in his name. So his name is Joshua Stone, and then he has MA for Master of Arts, ATC, NES, I don't know. I don't even know what all those other letters are, but he's got more initials after his name than he does in his name. So, Josh, real quick, why don't you tell me what some of those letters mean?
I'm a certified personal trainer, a corrective exercise specialist, a performance enhancement specialist. I am a fitness nutrition specialist. And I don't know what other ones are there, but I have a bunch of other crazy ones, such as a mixed martial arts conditioning coach and a senior fitness specialist to work with older adults. I don't know which ones are in my name there, but...
I don't know. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
So Josh has got a lot of certification, a lot of knowledge, a lot of training, and then Ryan does as well, obviously serving with the NATA, doing great things in his area. All right, so quickly before we actually get to the meat of the topic, we're going to talk about sleep. So it was here in Houston, it was when I got up this morning at 5:30, it was 39 degrees. And now that is almost as cold as it gets in Houston. So how did you guys sleep last night? Anybody have trouble sleeping? Anybody freeze last night?
I slept like a baby.
Good. Edith, you had trouble sleeping?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I couldn't sleep.
Too cold?
Nope.
Just couldn't sleep?
Yep.
Staying on the phone too late?
No.
No? All right, so I actually warmed up like two rice bags. You can use those as like hot packs. You can stick in the microwave and stuck them on the bed on my wife's side. So then when she got in bed, it was nice and warm instead of cold. So that was pretty cool. I felt like I was cool. And so, you know, I think that helped her relax and get to sleep better. So it was nice to wake up this morning and just it be that cold because it doesn't usually happen. Real quick, we have a pretty big supporter in the Pasadena Health Center. Pasadena Health Center has offered to, or actually...
My mom works there.
Oh, yeah? Very cool. Well, you'll have to tell her thank you, or maybe I will sometime. I'll call her when I'm telling her bad things about you. they have donated about $5,000 to allow us to purchase mannequins and curriculum to train all of our freshmen in CPR. So we have about 750, I think, freshmen, and we're going to be able to train all of them in CPR one day during April. you know, they won't be certified, but they'll be trained and they can at least act in an emergency. So that's pretty cool. And then one last thing before we get started is I saw my first surgery last week and I might be able to go to one next week. It was a clavicle fixation, and then there was also a medial patellofemoral ligament. I think I told my class already, I had to walk out of one of them because I was feeling a little lightheaded and didn't want to pass out in the middle of surgery. But it was pretty cool to go in there and see that. And then one of our students have a plate put on his clavicle. So I got to see the end of the broken bone. I got to see all that stuff. So it was a pretty sweet experience for me. And then I get to tell the students about it, and they're all pretty interested. So without much further ado, I think we're going to get to the meat. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ready here.
Give us some background how you got to where you are now.
Which one? Let's start with Josh, Mr. Stone.
Mr. Stone, yes.
Some background of where I got to where I am now. I fell in love with athletic training. I never knew about it until I was at Penn State University, and my guidance counselor, I said I like sports and I like medicine. She said, how about athletic training? I fell in love with it, and then I went to graduate school out in California, and I stayed a traditional athletic trainer working with university college athletes and some Olympic teams and whatnot, and fell in love with it. But then over some time of doing that, I said, I want to make a lot of money and I want to work 9 to 5. So I kind of branched out and started doing research with a doctor and started a business with him. And that led me to NASM, where I did a lot of research and writing. And that kind of led me here to Human Kinetics, where I am now working with the leaders of our field in our industry and helping them write textbooks that you may take in your class or that you would take in college. So that's kind of what led me to where I am. I just kind of followed my heart.
All right, so that's what you do at Human Kinetics. You basically write textbooks or you know, make sure you sell textbooks?
I'm an acquisition editor. Is kind of the liaison, the vision holder, or maybe even the engineer of a textbook. So you might be familiar with Craig Denegard's therapeutic modalities, or Chad Starkey's rehabilitation books, or Peg Hoagland's therapeutic exercise book. I'm the guy who kind of looks at that book and says, okay, I want to create this. This is what the industry needs. I want to create this. This is the chapters and how I want it to go. Here's all the things that I want to go into the book. And then I find the author to write that book. And then they send me, you know, 1,000 Word doc pages of what this book is going to be. And I kind of edit it and review it and say, this works, this doesn't work. And once I get a giant Word doc folder of all these chapters and pages, I speak with our design team and I say, okay, I want these colors and I want these tables, and then our design team puts it together and makes it a nice book that you would get in a classroom. So that's what an acquisition editor does.
Gotcha. I was actually trying to point out to my students, we have the Starkey and Ryan evaluation book over there, and I think I got therapeutic modalities or whatever sitting right there on the shelf. So I was trying to point out, pretty cool that you're involved with the books that are sitting here on my shelf that I sometimes use to teach these kids. So,
yeah.
All right, Mr. Wance, let's get to you real quick. How did you get to that point?
I got here through, I didn't know about athletic training in high school, but it was something that I had interest in generally in sports medicine. And so I actually went to Messiah College for athletic training. I've worked in a lot of different places, too many to list. But I have my master's through California University of Pennsylvania. And I've worked in a number of high schools. I've worked in professional baseball. And I've worked in the college setting. And I've also worked in the clinical setting. And so I have a number of settings that I've worked in, and just getting to this point I got to Lehigh University through networking, through knowing people, and being able to have a reputation for who I am.
All right, so we're talking about ICE today. Alex, you tell me your experience with ICE. When do you use ICE?
I use ICE every time I get out of softball because, like, my throwing arm hurts, and it usually, like, just helps with the hurting, like, with the pain.
So all right, Aisha?
I use it for track season because last year I had strained my quad. And I would have to go in every day and put ice on my leg and do little rehabs for it.
All right. So I think that's, for the most part, we had some athletes in here using ice. And so that's kind of our experience. Now let's hear what you're...
Mr. Stone, can you explain the theory on using ice?
My theory on using ice... I think that the ice has its pros and its cons, just like many things else in our practice. But my theory on ice is that it is way, way, way overused, and that we've lost sight of the purpose of ice and the benefits of ice, and we've begun to mask what our body is designed to do. And if you picture your blood vessels and your inflammatory system, much like you would a highway, and all the cars going down the highway, our cells going to the site to heal it. But then suddenly you put a roadblock up there, which is the ice. Those cells can't go anywhere. And inflammation is the number one step for healing. And if we don't have the inflammatory cells get to the site, we cannot have removal of dead debris, we cannot have healing. So this is where I come a little bit mixed feelings about the use of ice for all these situations. And I remember when I was working in traditional athletic training, it got to the point where a visiting team would come to our facility and I would say, how many ice bags do you need for your athletes? And they would know the exact number. Well, I got eight players with two knees each, and I need three shoulder ice bags, and I need 16 ice bags. And over time I started to question, wow, isn't this a bit much? We have these cells that are supposed to be doing a job, but we're kind of preventing it from doing so. So I started to look at it from that point of view, and I began to experiment. And I realized that in many instances, I would have better outcomes if ice was not used. And so I developed this theory of, let's be cognizant of when we're using ice and why we're using ice.
Mr. Stone, tell us how you came to this conclusion.
It was funny. I've always been a why guy. I would always ask why or why not. And when I worked in the clinical setting, I would always ask my students and challenge my students, hey, if you're going to do something, tell me why. And if they could answer three whys, I knew they fully understood it. And I went to Europe with our volleyball team. And over in Europe, they do not use ice at all. So here's our team who's used to getting ice after every single practice and every single game. And we went to our first place in Switzerland, and they didn't have ice. They didn't even have an ice machine anywhere available. And when I asked for ice or if there was some available, they looked at me like I had three eyes. So our athletes were forced to go without ice for about a period of about 16 to 20 days while playing. So they got no ice while playing over a period of about 2 to 3 weeks. And it was crazy because a lot of my athletes started feeling better and having less pain. So the combination of me asking why, challenged myself to ask, for me to answer the question why, And then I saw the benefits. So when we got back to the States, some of my biggest problem athletes who had a sore shoulder after playing baseball, I said, you know, you've been dealing with this for quite some time, and it's not getting better, despite all the rehab and icing and treatment we do. Let's just try one thing and not ice. We did it, and the pain started getting better, and that athlete kind of flipped. That athlete said, I will never ice again. I do not want to do it. So I then took that with a bunch of other athletes and kept trying more and more and more. And more often than not, I would have positive outcome for those who did not ice.
All right, so Ryan, we kind of skipped over you. How do you feel about using ice?
Well, I have a lot of the similar experience. And I was actually looking at this more closely this week, and there were two ACL rehab patients that were in this week, and they're beyond the acute phase of their rehab, and I asked them why are you icing? Are you in pain? And their response was, no, I'm sore. My PT told me to ice after exercise. And I was like, why? And that's always been my kind of my thought is, why are we icing? And it goes back to when I was in undergrad working with baseball, and baseball players are infamous for wanting to ice their elbow and their shoulder every time they throw. And there really is not a great reason for doing that. Some of them think that it helps with their recovery. My thought is that ice actually helps with the pain, but it's not doing anything for most of what we are trying to do. And I feel like it's a lot like a lot of other modalities. We use heat, we use electric stim, we use ultrasound, we use diathermy, like we use all these different modalities. But most of the time we're looking more closely at why we're using them than why we're using ice. And we kind of use ice very haphazardly. We use ice for and it is a safer modality, but at the same time, there are reasons to use it, and there are reasons for not using it. And I think we need to look at those.
All right, so that kind of, I think my reason for using ice has always been that that's what we were taught to do. So people that have more experience that are, I would say, smarter than me, or at least in that area, have said, this is what you're supposed to do. And, you know, it's funny talking to you guys. I'm thinking I'm probably still going to use ice. But then at the same time, I make fun of or tease these kids here around us that, you know, they'll go to their mom's cousin's aunt's friends that's a quote-unquote doctor that does stuff out of her apartment, and she cracked her ankle. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Or I actually had one kid with a nail. They stepped on a nail and they put gasoline on the cut, thinking it would keep it from getting an infection. And, you know, we're a predominantly Hispanic culture, and I'm thinking, all these cultural things, why are we doing that? This doesn't make sense. I mean, what you guys, this stuff doesn't make sense. You know, let's follow some medicine.
Did
but then at the same time, you what?
Did they say if it burned?
No. He came in with it wrapped down with gasoline. So I took the wrap off. I'm like, oh my goodness.
It looked bad.
No, it didn't look bad. It's just, I'm thinking, why would you possibly put gasoline on a cut?
Maybe.
So anyways, all that to say is, you know, I'm challenging their cultural norms because that's what they grew up knowing. But at the same time, I'm not really willing to do that to myself. So this is pretty interesting seeing, just hearing you guys say, you know, the main reason you got to this is just by asking why. Why are we doing this? And, you know, for Josh, sounds like you did it because of necessity. You question that. And so it's interesting for me to see this. So I'm glad we're getting to talk to you guys.
Well, one thing I'd like to add to that is, you know, going back to the cultural thing that you're talking about, Jeremy, you hit it spot on. Western medicine is completely different from, or medicine here in the United States is completely different from medicine across seas and many other places. And why are we right and they are wrong? You look at traditional Chinese medicine, they haven't been using ice for hundreds and hundreds of years. But they can fix it. And we look at over in Europe when prolotherapy and plasma injections, those things are kind of designed to increase inflammation, where we're trying to decrease it. So they're doing something completely opposite. The same with, again, in acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine, they don't use ice. They may actually use cupping or many other techniques to increase blood flow to an area. That method works. We think our method works. So which one is better? And I think it's important for us to say, okay, which one is better? Can we utilize one of each? And I think where clinicians lose track is thinking that they are the right way. I have my theory about ice, but I know for a fact that a lot of people disagree with me. And I know for a fact that I am not 100% the right answer to this. I think we could take a little bit of from everyone everywhere in this world to think about what we're doing.
I find it interesting that you said that people disagree. I was talking about this at work, which I'm very hesitant to do that a lot of times, but I figured I would throw it out to our one student and just kind of challenge her. Why are we icing? And then I kind of brought in one of the other assistants, and she was a little bit more by the book as far as her answers, and he was, I'm not going to say open, but he was a little bit more taken aback by the fact that I was even suggesting that ice is not always appropriate. He doesn't have the same feeling as far as that I do as far as baseball players and icing, I agree with Josh in that there are, I think there may be a place for ice, but I don't think that it should be the central place that we have placed, that we put ice in for, in the United States for sports medicine. I think that I think it's definitely overused.
Mr. Wands, in your opinion, is ice or cold therapy ever appropriate?
I think that there is a time for ice and for cold. I like it initially to help with the pain, but after that, I feel like there's very little, there's not as much use for ice. I don't use it in chronic cases. I would rather not use it in chronic cases for tendinosis. I do like it for cryokinetics, and cryokinetics is where you use ice and exercise to help, I'm going to say, modulate the pain while you get motion and get some function back. So I use it more for a numbing agent in that case than for inflammation. But I would use it for pain. And the research has shown that ice is most useful for pain, but not for minimizing or reducing swelling. It doesn't do anything. The research doesn't show that.
All right, Mr. Stone, what do you think about that?
Despite my recent blog posts, there is absolutely a use for ice. I didn't intend for it to make it sound like there is never a use. I agree 100% with Ryan's thoughts with regards to chronic injuries. Very, 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 very rarely will I ever use ice for a chronic injury such as jumper's knee or runner's knee or Achilles tendinopathy. And depending on the acute incidents, such as an acute ankle sprain, I might use it depending on the severity, or I might not. But there is absolutely a need for it. And one thing that kind of gets misplaced in our rehabilitation protocols is if you have a patient or an athlete who is headstrong on what they want and what they do not want, sometimes it's more important to do what they want because that placebo effect would make them feel like they're getting better. So if I had an athlete with a knee issue, and despite me saying, I don't think this is good to ice, I think you should resolve from icing, and they think I'm completely crazy, and I know that it's going to have a negative effect, if I lose that battle, I might tell them to do so. So psychological profile of that client plays an important role with what you're doing, because sometimes you just need them to believe that what you're doing is working.
I gotcha.
And let me add something. The reason that I don't use it for the chronic cases, and I think Josh would agree, when we're talking about the acute versus chronic cases, we're talking about inflammation, and inflammation happens where there is really where there's vascularization. And in chronic cases, in the tendinosis, the jumper's knee, the those types of things, the tendons don't have a great blood supply, and so there's not. And research is showing that there is not inflammation where there's a tendinosis, which is why the verbiage has changed a little bit from tendinitis to tendinosis, because there's not inflammation present, and so we're not even doing anything with inflammation at that point. So we're not even in the chronic cases. We're not even talking about inflammation. So I just wanted to kind of give that piece of information.
It would seem heat therapy would be harmful too. Can you speak about that?
What was the question?
It would seem heat therapy would be harmful too. Can you speak about that?
Yeah, because if we're talking about ice isn't very good, then it would seem the opposite. Using heat wouldn't be very good either.
Again, I think that there's a place for both, and I think that I would rather not use heat as often as we do either. I was always taught that exercise is as good or better than heat, because they both accomplish the same thing in increasing tissue temperature. With ice, we're working on decreasing tissue temperature. With heat, we're trying to increase tissue temperature. If we're trying to work on flexibility, tissue extensibility, if we're trying to work on addressing specific issues, and heat is sometimes the only way to do that, or heat can also help with pain, and so heat is a good modality in some cases. I would not use it in for an acute ankle sprain or for an acute injury. But I would certainly still use heat in some cases. I will throw out there that there's also, and at Lehigh they use it, and I try to keep my opinions to myself. But they use contrast baths and reverse contrast baths, which are alternating between a warm whirlpool and an ice bath. And I don't use those very often, if at all, because that's not my preferred, that's not the way that I treat. But some people use those as well. And so some people will alternate heat and cold and have success with that. I don't know if you want to get Josh's opinion on heat.
Yeah, so I was about to say, Josh, what do you think?
The way the question was posed is heat harmful? When comparing it to, I think cold therapy is more harmful than heat therapy. But I agree with I agree with Ryan that much like many modalities, STEM, ultrasound, what have you, I think heat too is overused, and we have to know why we're doing it. We can generate heat and increase cellular metabolism by exercise, and I think that is much more important than adding some type of heat, whether it's ultrasound or a superficial hot pack. I don't think it's harmful, but I don't think the benefits are so significant that you need to use heat instead of other treatment options.
So you would say that, in your opinion, again, that ice is harmful, heat is kind of neutral? Is that kind of what I'm understanding there?
I think that I'm saying that cryotherapy can be more harmful because it may inhibit healing.
All right. So real quick, we were talking about cryotherapy. What about, you know, there's all the big push for, what are those machines called? The game ready? Because that's giving you compression and either hot or cold. So you have any personal opinion on those type of machines?
From my point of view, I think when we look at when a game ready is used, it's traditionally after a surgery, in the first few days after a surgery. In my opinion, I think the research supports that because we have significant trauma going on. I think the research supports that. And, you know, our body has ability to heal, but our body has an ability to go overboard as well. And I think after a surgery or after a significant acute injury, significant being the key word there, a game ready, it has merit. But when we're 3 weeks post-injury or we're or if it's just a mild ankle sprain or what have you, I don't think a game ready is necessary.
I think that the compression is definitely useful in a lot of cases. And I think that that balance between ice and compression is what we need. I would prefer a game ready over just an ice bag. Now, the game ready is a lot more expensive than an ice bag, and an ice bag is a lot more accessible and you can move with it. But I feel like there's definitely a great benefit to the pneumatic, the compression of the game ready. And so I really like the game ready. I use it when I'm able to. I feel like there's if it is an option where I can do the different aspects of rice as far as the ice, the compression, and the elevation, then it's a win. If I can't do all of them, and I have to choose one of them, and if it's for pain, then I'll choose ice. If it's for swelling, I would choose compression, and elevation if possible. So. Looking at what the purpose is, looking at the why are we doing it, I think is important.
Right, so I talked earlier about going to see a surgery. So one of our doctors, the orthopedic surgeon, I asked him this question, knowing that we were going to be having this. And in his opinion, he said ice is fine, but because a lot of the people that are opponents of ice that say it's not good are advocating heat, and he said that increases swelling, and then unchecked swelling can create more scar tissue. And so that's kind of the reason why we're asking about the heat pit heat instead of ice. What are your thoughts on that as far as unchecked swelling or using heat or even creating the extra blood flow with the body created heat through movement and exercises, creating more scar tissue? Either one of you.
I agree that the orthopod is certainly right that swelling leads to more scar tissue. But ice does not remove swelling. It is lymphatic drainage that improves swelling and takes swelling out. And the reason we have an accumulation of swelling is not because we have excessive amounts of swelling. It's that because the lymphatic system cannot remove it fast enough. So that's when massage and compression, if compression is applied properly, will help facilitate the removal of swelling. So ice is good because it can reduce the amount of swelling, but swelling is a byproduct of the necessary process for tissue healing. We don't need to reduce swelling. We need to get swelling out of the area once it has occurred. That's the key component here.
And I agree right along those lines. And scar tissue is not a bad thing because scar tissue is how our body heals. Now, if there's an excessive amount of scar tissue because we're not doing anything with the swelling, then that's definitely an issue. And that's why using the ice initially, and there's some research, and I can't quote it, but has shown that ice actually increases lymphatic permeability, which that doesn't allow the lymphatic system to actually get the fluid out of the area. So it's trying to move it, but there are holes in the bucket. So if you're trying to drain a pool and you have holes in the bottom of your bucket, you're not going to pull that much water out of the pool. But so ice can actually, I think, in some cases, I'm not going to say a lot of cases, in some cases, do the reverse of what we're trying to do in reducing swelling. I mean, it can minimize swelling initially, which is important, and I think that needs to be our focus, is in minimizing the amount of swelling initially, and after surgery, that's certainly an issue. But definitely, heat is not going to solve the problem either. Exercise is great because another thing that it does is contraction of muscle, which also helps pump fluid away. And that movement is valuable. With baseball players, I will encourage them, rather than throwing an ice bag on their elbow or on their shoulder, after they're throwing, cool down, run a little bit, move a little bit, because that's actually going to get rid of any of the junk that's in there. And that's a topic for a whole other discussion, but the movement, the activity, is, I think, more important than throwing a ice bag or heat on.
All right, so for Alex, my softball player here, so after she throws, her elbow's hurting, should she ice for the pain? Or should she do some jogging and some other exercises, and that's going to help help get rid of that, and then ice it later if it's still hurting? What are your, like, if we're going to kind of put this into action with Alex here, she's going to be our test dummy, then sure. What are we going to do?
I would advocate for, after you've thrown, and are you a pitcher, Alex?
Sometimes, like, sometimes they'll get me to pitch, but I throw most of the time. I'm shortstop.
Okay, because softball pitching is really a safe movement for softball, for the arm. And so, you want to make sure that you're doing the right thing for your arm. Making sure that you're strengthening and making sure your arm is healthy, making sure your flexibility is good. I wouldn't use ice at all after throwing. And that's, if I had my way, folks would not ice after they threw. And I think that you might notice a difference just with that. But I would cool down, make sure that you're cooling down your body, throwing a little, maybe doing a little throwing afterwards just to move stuff around, not hard, just tossing, and then doing a little running. Those are, I think, things that can help.
Thank you.
All right, Josh, what do you think? You got any other action steps there for Alex?
I would ask this. It seemed like that you ice every day after practice. How come it's not getting better is my first question. How come every day after practice it's sore? That to me tells me that what is going on might not be working. If you are my athlete, first of all, I really don't know because I have not evaluated you. I have no idea what your injury is. But if you are my athlete and if this was just a typical chronic pain issue with your shoulder, I would probably say try it for a couple weeks. Do active cool down like Ryan had suggested. And I would also add in corrective exercise training to make sure that you have the proper mechanics that would prevent you from having pain. That's my two cents.
All right, so again, cool down, and then maybe work on some corrective exercises to make sure that the motion is correct.
Absolutely.
Alex, you find that your arm hurts more after pitching or after doing shortstop and then throwing the football?
Shortstop.
All right, so it's elbow, right?
Yeah.
All right, so we've been icing her elbow, so maybe we'll try doing cool down, and then some light tossing after that, or some pitching. What would you recommend after she's gone through a full day of softball practice, doing a lot of reps at shortstop?
I would recommend a light cool down, and then the next thing I would do is I would try without ice, and then the next thing I would do is identify her mechanics starting from her shoulder to see where deficit or dysfunctional movement occurs and correct that. And let's try that for 3 to 4 weeks, maybe even 5 weeks. It takes a long time to correct that stuff and see if it helps.
All right, so that means I have to get trained on specifically identifying the correct motion. But we're going to be talking to somebody later in January that's supposed to be helping us with functional movement assessment. So maybe I'll learn something then. I should know that as an athletic trainer, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we should know a lot of things, but we don't.
And that's why I do this podcast. So I can learn something new all the time. Real quick, I mean, I typed this in the notes. When I did this 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had done 520 daily treatments, and 320 of them included some sort of either cold whirlpool or ice, something like that. So obviously it's a predominant thing here. So maybe starting with Alex and some of our other injuries, that we'll start attempting this no ice deal. Interesting, we had two volleyball girls sprain their ankles pretty bad. Both of them were put in a boot, and one of them was told that she was probably going to have surgery to fix the syndesmosis. But she never really came in for treatment, and so she didn't end up using the cold whirlpool because she didn't ever really come in. She came in probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 times. The other one came in every day and did the whirlpool 2 or 3 times a day and did exercises and all that stuff. And so the one that was supposed to have surgery, she's back playing basketball. The other one that came in every day, she came back and played volleyball at the end of the season. But I'm just wondering if, you know, in light of all the stuff that we're learning here, that she was aided in her healing by not sticking into the cold whirlpool. Any thoughts on that?
It's possible. It's possible. It could be that. It could be how they rehabilitated afterwards. Or maybe not so much the cold whirlpool treatment in the beginning, but how long did the treatment of cold whirlpool continue to go on? I personally don't see a significant need for icing beyond 48, 72 hours. After that, my question is why. But it's certainly possible. It's certainly possible. I've tried it, and I've seen it work better without ice.
All right. Have you, on that same note, have you ever had any cases? Well, I guess you wouldn't know. It would have worked better with ice, but have you ever kind of seen this theory backfire at all?
Backfire. I've seen it where somebody has an issue and they were trying ice, and then we switched to no ice, and it stayed the same, not got worse. I've never seen it get worse.
I've never had a time where I've wanted to, where I wish that I would have iced more. I've never regretted, I've never wished that we had used more ice. So now there are times that someone did not, may not have iced initially, and so the first part of the rehab was more difficult, but I've never wished that we had iced more based on the outcome, no.
All right, so we're getting close to the end to where I got to let the kids go. I know Marlon's got one more question for you.
Mr. Stone, can you tell us about the feedback you have received from your recent blog post with over 30,000 views?
It was insane. But anytime you post something that's controversial to popular belief, you get a lot of comments. But, you know, so I was surprised by the support and the agreement. What was interesting is people wanted answers. What do you do for this? What do you do for that? Well, you can't answer that, what you would do for every single situation. My only thing was, I just think that we overuse ice. Of course, others disagreed with what I thought, which is fine. That's why this is why we continually evolve. And I'm fine with others disagreeing with me. Doesn't mean I'm right. Doesn't mean they're wrong, or vice versa. The most surprising, one of the most surprising things to me, is that many of the people who commented, specifically athletic trainers, didn't see it as a problem or didn't see that we're overusing ice. And I still go to athletic training rooms and I see bags and bags of ice after practice. I see 70 or 50 of the 100 track kids coming in and getting ice for their shin splints. And they still don't see that this is an issue. That's what's probably pretty surprising to me. But beyond, for this being such a controversial topic and for something that is significantly contrary to everything we've been told in the past and that we've done, most of the comments have been in favor and saying, you know what, this makes sense. Maybe we do.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way. Like, like you said, you haven't seen anybody get worse, so what can it hurt? We're going to give it a shot, and maybe we'll try it with Alex. Maybe I'll try it with some of the other patients, and then we can get back in touch at some point, either, you know, Twitter or email or something like that, and then kind of just discuss our results. So it's interesting thought, interesting approach. Definitely not normal. It's not what we're taught in the textbooks. You know, you're always taught ice and all the different ways to use ice, and so I definitely appreciate you guys' opinion. As we're about to wrap it up, Ryan, why don't you tell me real quick, if somebody wants to hear more from you, how are they going to get a hold of you?
email is wantzatc@hotmail.com, or on Twitter is wantzatc, and then I'm also on Facebook. So,
all right, Josh.
I would recommend going to my blog page, athleticmedicine.wordpress.com. On there are links to my Twitter account. And also, there's a underneath the Train With Me tab, there is a if you just submit that form and ask a general inquiry, I'll get it to my email.
All right, so athleticmedicine.wordpress or WANTZATC at Hotmail. So, and then you can get hold of those two guys, or you can always get a hold of me, and then I can put you in that direction. And hopefully I'll have links to those on the Sports of Medicine broadcast. So,
we want to thank the people who helped this broadcast. We want to thank the people who helped make this broadcast possible. G Hats for sponsoring CEU Opportunities, Pasadena ISD Education Foundation, and DonorsChoose.org.
All right, and then if you want to check out our website, Josh and Ryan, if you'll hang on for just a second, I'll tell you guys about once I let these guys go. So you can check out our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Almost every Wednesday we have a live stream, and you can connect with us there. Or you can follow us on Twitter, PHS Sports Med, Google Plus Sports Medicine Broadcast, Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training. So for Jeremy,
Anna,
George,
Edith,
Lena,
Aisha,
Alex, Marlin,
and the rest of the Sports Medicine crew, that's a wrap.